This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years. This is WGNS Action Line. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning from the Murfreesboro Fire Rescue Department, we do have Fire Marshal Brian Lowe with us. How are you this morning?
I'm well. Thank you, Scott.
What do you do in the fire marshal's office?
Well, as the fire marshal, I supervise the assistant fire marshals and inspectors, but we do all the public information in the city, safety talks, fire code inspections, and fire investigation.
Whenever there's a house fire, let's say, your office heads out there to investigate the cause of the fire?
Well, it depends. If company officers or our battalion chiefs, if they can determine that cause and origin, there's no need for us really. But if it's something that they're having trouble with, if there's injuries involved, we're going to be en route.
How long have you been in firefighting?
I've been doing it October 96, almost 28, 29 years now. So
you've seen a lot of different fires and situations, I'm sure.
I've been involved in quite a bit, yes.
Now, from that time when you first started, the fire department's evolved and taken on many more duties than what they originally did.
That's correct. So I came to Murfreesboro in 2001. When I arrived here, we were just running fires. So I think around 2002, 2003, we took on that first responder role and started responding at BLS. And that's blossomed into a little more now.
Now, as far as fires and fire investigations go, like the numbers of deaths per year and the number of fire injuries, are we looking at high numbers or are those fairly low?
Here in Murfreesboro, it's going to be low, maybe one, two deaths a year. Injuries, it varies from year to year, but most of those injuries, we've had several injuries to firefighters this year, and those might be burns or lacerations, things like that. But occasionally we'll get injuries from homeowners, smoke inhalation, where they may have been outside of the house, but tried to run back in to get something, or just trying to fight the fire themselves. So,
what are some of the most dangerous situations for firefighters to come up against and for homeowners as well when it comes to fires?
Well, when you have a house fire and you're arriving, obviously, if you have smoke showing, we're going to have to do a 360, walk around the house to determine really what's going on. But entering that house when smoke's down to the floor, when you can't see see in front of you, you got to be on your hands and knees. So you don't know where the fire's at and you're looking for it. To me, that's probably the most hazardous situation that can be.
Is there a big difference as far as how homes are built today, and are they more fireproof than they were in years past, or what are you seeing?
Years past, we call that legacy construction. Wood was a little thicker, and craftsman style homes where they're hand cutting the rafters and there's a lot of open space. And these days, you're seeing a lot of pre-manufactured lumber, LVL, laminated lumber, and just a lot more glues used in the construction these days. So it burns different, burns a lot quicker. Fires can propagate a lot quicker. And if our response time is on average here in the city 4 minutes, and really that fire being identified and us getting en route makes a big difference getting on that scene to the size of that fire.
I didn't even think about the different glues and everything that go into construction these days.
Yeah.
Seems like we're hearing more talk about people building homes out of concrete. That's something that's really caught on, not really here yet, but it does look like it could lead to more construction ideas here. But with that being said, these concrete style homes with more concrete in the actual construction of the house, is that something that's much safer?
I'll have to yield to the experts on that, but I would say concrete's non-combustible, right? And so if you have a home that's built out of masonry concrete, obviously there's going to be sections of your home that will not catch fire. It will not burn.
Probably more expensive, though, I guess.
I would say.
Of course, construction costs are already going up quite a bit compared to years past, considerably, in fact.
Yeah, of course, from my layman's perspective, a few years ago, I think we were taking quotes on stations, and we were around $1,000 a square foot. Now, that's gone down considerably, but it's still pretty expensive, around, $600, $700 a square foot to build a commercial building.
Not cheap.
No, not cheap.
What are some of the fires that you've investigated over the years, or some situations maybe that you investigated that have kind of stuck with you? I would just imagine that some investigations are a little bit harder to go home from as opposed to others.
Yeah, that's a good assumption, but It's hard to say. I don't want to say too much about some of the fires I've investigated around, but I'll say, you know, it seems like discarded smoking material. You know, anytime we have a fire and we engage our investigative team, we have to go in and really determine what's the potential here? Where are the ignition sources? So we'll have to really identify all the ignition sources and start ruling those out. And even if a lot of times we can really tell, hey, here's an area where people smoke and it looks like maybe those smoking materials may have caught fire and then either caught the grass or caught the wood next to the house on fire and got up in the attic, or in some cases where we've had people who would smoke on their balconies and those buckets that they put their butts in, that trash accumulates and then eventually a fire will build in that bucket. And if it gets on the outside of a structure and gets up in the attic, that structure is sprinklered. Sometimes it gets above that sprinkler system, can cause a lot of damage.
There was a point across the United States where we saw a big uptick in fires that were caused by things like meth labs. Is that something that you're still seeing today?
Can't say I've seen one of those in a while. You know, yeah, 20 years ago, we were seeing several clandestine labs here. And then that, I guess it shifted to what we call a shake and bake, where they were doing it in the cars. And then we had several car fires where that was happening. But I can't say we've had a lab in a while.
The variety of different calls that the fire department could respond to is literally all over the place.
We're an all-hazard service, right?
Coming up just next month, we have 4th of July, and there are certain ordinances in place in the city where people can't be just randomly shooting off fireworks. How do those ordinances lay out for people, and what should they understand?
Okay, for the 4th of July, the ordinance, July the 3rd, 4th and 5th, you can shoot your fireworks from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. I think the temporary tents now, I think June the 28th is the date that those firework tents will start selling. But those times spelled out in the ordinance, 10 a.m. to 11 p.m., that's when people should be shooting their fireworks.
If anybody wants to see that, I guess the easiest thing to do is just Google Murfreesboro fireworks ordinance, and then it should pull it up.
You can do that, murfreesborotn.gov. You can go on there and search it using some of the help search bars on there.
Is it the city fire department that would oversee that ordinance, or would it be, I guess, police that would enforce it?
Well, police and then the fire marshal office staff.
Do you get a lot of calls around the 4th of July each year to go see what's going on with fireworks being shot off or why, or to remind people of the ordinance?
We do. So in that ordinance, it's important to note that you need to be on private property to shoot your fireworks. Don't set up in the middle of a street or public way to shoot your fireworks. And part of that is when a firework goes up, it must come down, right? If you're in a neighborhood where it's really congested, there's a lot of homes close together, if your fireworks are coming down on your neighbor's property, and we need to be mindful of that and need to have their permission.
Are a lot of fires caused by fireworks each year?
Well, that's a good question. So last year, from 9 o'clock to about midnight, we had 6 fires that we responded to. One of them resulted in a family being displaced, but all of them were due to improperly disposing of the remnants of the fireworks.
And do you have a lot of injuries with fireworks? Because I know when I was younger, we used to do stupid stuff, like throw bottle rockets after we lit them and dumb stuff.
Well, you can put me in that group too. So I did not check with the emergency department last year to determine what, if there were any injuries that just walked in due to that.
And I think it's because of dumb stuff like that, the city also outlawed bottle rockets, right?
That's correct. There are prohibited fireworks inside the city. Anything with a stick, bottle rockets, anything reloadable, the mortar shells that you reload, they are prohibited inside the city, and we do not allow our vendors to sell them.
Are there some fireworks that are a lot more explosive than others, or have those types of fireworks that maybe were more explosive, have those all been outlawed?
Well, I can't say, but you know, a firework is a pyrotechnic device, so it's unpredictable. You're lighting a wick and hopefully standing back and watching it go, so it's really unpredictable what it's going to do. You hope that it follows the channel or the tube where it's aiming, but that's why we ask that either adults or adult supervision be in place.
Do you still run across kids who bundle or tie different fireworks together and light them all off at once?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's out there.
Still happens?
Yeah, still happens.
What else do we need to be concerned about during 4th of July, during that time period?
I think what I was wanting to say today was, one, if you're shooting your fireworks, let them cool down at night. 4th of July is on a Friday this time. don't be in a hurry to get your firework debris up. Rake it up in the yard in a pile if you want to, but leave it there overnight and dispose of it the next day after it's cooled down. Our main problem last year was folks who were really just wanting to get their stuff up quick and get it out of the way, but they were placing that into the city trash cans and up next to their house and their cars, and we had car fires and house fires last year due to that.
Now, I know you said make sure you shoot them off on private property, and so that idea of going out in front of your house in the city street, that's not something you're supposed to do.
That's not something you're supposed to do. It looks really nice because the street is flat and level to hard surface and it won't burn, but we had issues last year getting to some of our calls due to people and their street shows that they were having. Yeah, we just advise, just stay in your driveway, stay in your yard, keep the fireworks out of the street in case emergency vehicles do have to get through, because they're not going to want to run over your fireworks.
In that same subject of not being able to get through or to get to a potential patient or something whenever you do have a call because of the road being blocked, is that also an issue that you see more of at local retail stores and shops where people are parking in the fire lane to maybe just run in and run out?
Good question. So yeah, fire lane is still the fire lane. We want those areas clear. Obviously, that lane is for emergency vehicles, and if something happens inside that store, we want to be able to, one, service those folks as fast as we can. But another hazard that is presented when you are parked in the fire lane is folks who are leaving those stores. They have to get past your car and probably in the lane of conveyance so that they can see what's coming. A lot of times, folks are already out in that lane of conveyance and they may not see a car. So it poses a traffic hazard as well, where people and cars are interacted in that lane, I guess that interchange from store to parking lot.
Do you ever see what happens like in the movies where a fire truck comes up to the scene and they end up having to bust the window out of the car and run the hose through the car in order to get inside the business?
I think what you're alluding to, I see that in the movies when they've parked in front of a hydrant, but I don't think we've had anybody to have to bust a windshield to connect to the hydrant. But that brings up another good point, to not park in front of hydrants and to give them at least 3 feet on either side.
When you do see somebody parking in that fire lane, and if they left their car unattended, they're not with the car, do you write the tickets? Does the fire department write the tickets?
Yes.
Or does police do as well?
Well, police, we write tickets as well.
And how much of a fine is that typically?
The max city fine is $50, but I learned a long time ago not to speak for the judge, so I'll let that judge set the fine, so yeah.
So I guess ultimately the judge could say, hey, you've done this 3 times before, we're going to charge you this instead.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, that max fine for each citation, $50, but there is a court cost associated with that too.
Do you see repeat offenders doing things like that?
There is an attitude out there, well, I'll just pay the fine. And so, yeah, and in that case, I would hope that we can only write the ticket for that infraction and let it go on. If the judge wants to do more along that lines later, that's up to them.
It seems like common sense would kind of tell you, well, what if somebody in this store I'm visiting has some type of medical emergency and you're the reason for the delay in getting that person help? So why would you do that to begin with?
Most of what I see is folks are either just running in, they have an idea, they're going to run in quick, grab something, or go to the service counter, in and out type deal, but it always ends up being more than that.
Is there an average or maybe a normal call that you would investigate, a normal fire or incident? Is there something that you're seeing more of than other things?
Really, any house fire that is going to leave the room of origin, that usually engages our investigative team. If someone has a candle on the nightstand and a company officer or battalion chief can figure that out, they may not need our help. But if it leaves that room of origin, there's going to be a lot of damage, and they're going to activate the investigation team.
I've only heard of this happening one or two times maybe in Rutherford County that I know of, where there was an explosion at a house and it was caused in some way by a leaking gas line. And I think the one that I did hear of most recently was probably about 20 years ago. But do those types of things still happen?
We haven't had one here in a while, thank goodness. I think the last one that I'm aware of was in Gallatin. I think it was last year in Gallatin, where I think there may have been a natural gas line that was loose. If it filled a space and that mixture was just right and it found an ignition source, it can be explosive and catastrophic to that structure.
So in those situations, I mean, obviously you would smell gas, I would think.
Yeah, the chemical mercaptan is what they put in the natural gas, so that you would smell it, yeah.
if somebody comes home from work and they open the front door, if there's some type of spark, is that enough to actually set off a fire?
If that explosive range is right and it finds an ignition source, yes, that's enough to set it off. I would say any time you smell gas, leave the area and contact the gas company or even contact the 911 authorities, and we can initiate that process for you.
How big of a explosion could that potentially be? I mean, could it lead to damage far beyond your personal house?
If there's a lot of things moving, right? If there's a lot of projectiles, I'm sure it could break windows and other things around your neighbors, you know, around the area. So, yeah, there is a fallout area for that.
Scary to think about. So if you have, let's say, an older water heater, is there an automatic shutoff in case the pilot light goes out, or does it just keep blowing off gas?
That's a good question. I think I've had one before that would go out, but I'm not a water heater expert. I would say that if it was leaking, I don't know. I'll have to look into that. Scott, that's a good question.
Potentially scary, I guess.
Yeah,
I mean, you're
yeah.
talking about if it had time to fill an entire house with gas, you'd have to be out of town probably for something like that to happen.
Yeah,
man.
You're going to smell the rotten egg smells as soon as, you know, if there's a small leak, you're going to smell it.
Now, when you smell smells like that when you're outdoors, because I know I've driven through an area and I've smelled what smells like natural gas before, are those situations usually already called in? Or if we smell that, no matter where we are, we should probably call for some type of help?
I would call, report it. You know, personal experience, my neighbor knocked on my door and said, hey, I smell gas on the side of your house here where the your meter is at. And I could not smell it inside the house, but when I walked out, I could smell it as well. And I called Atmos, that's my provider, and they came out and said, yeah, I had a bad filter or something like that on my meter, and they had to replace it. So it was an emergency replacement. So yeah, if you smell outside, definitely let someone know.
Outside of things like fire calls or fire investigations, are there other things that the fire marshal's office does investigate?
Let's see. We're primarily fire investigators, so no.
And then when you look at different fires, when you look at the idea of somebody potentially lighting a fire themselves for insurance in order to rob the insurance company of X amount of dollars, do you see a lot of arson-type cases like that?
We do see arson, and that is probably the number one cause of folks not being able to make the payment and having an insurance policy and then wanting to take advantage of that. Thing is, once, especially if you have an insurance company, they're going to send out their own private investigators, and we're going to work with them as well. And, you know, in that fine print, a lot of those policies states that we must work with those private investigators. The homeowner must work with those private investigators as well so that they can determine the origin and cause of that.
So those investigators that come out for the insurance company, are they literally working alongside you? Are they doing their own testing? And what does that usually look like?
We're going to be there first, right? And it takes maybe a day or two for the private investigators to get out. But if it's something that they need to see or they want to see, we're going to, we're going to put a hold on that scene to make sure nothing is touched. But then they will come out, and a lot of times they will contact us, and just to be there with them, just to, you know, we work alongside each other to make that happen.
And of course, if that leads to criminal charges being filed in a future court case, is the fire marshal's office, are they going to the courts to actually testify in some cases?
Yes. So the fire marshal's office, we're the ones that's going to be filing those charges, and the investigators, whoever that lead investigator is, will follow through on that to take it all the way to court.
There are arson charges that are filed that comes through the fire department, or is the police department also helping out with the investigation and filing the actual charges?
Well, the fire investigators have to be the ones to file those charges for arson and fire, but we do work with PD and their criminal investigation division to help us with part of that process.
That's got to be interesting at times. I mean, I don't know what you do as far as testing goes. Do you have like a crime lab of sorts?
Well, we take advantage of TBI. If we collect samples on the scene, either dry or wet, we're going to carry them to TBI and look for those things that we look for. And they usually, within a month, will get us a report back to determine if, what we suspected was correct or not.
Is that one of the more interesting things that you do? I mean, I would think there's that many arson-related investigations, or maybe there are, but it seems like it'd be interesting.
Well, there's more than you would think, but yes, it is interesting.
Each year, when you do investigate an arson case, is there an average age of offender, or is there an average case of, well, they tried to set a house on fire versus a car? What are those things that you do see?
I think we're all over the place on age right now, but I really haven't couldn't really say if there's a specific thing that we do see, but, you know, we do see that flammable liquids, folks like to, you know, use gas, right? And other flammable liquids to start fires. That's it's all over the place. And it is a challenge for our inspectors to our investigators to really get to the bottom of what went on there.
Is it sometimes just blaringly obvious? Well, you know, they just poured gasoline everywhere and lit it on fire.
It can be. Yes, sometimes it is, but still there's a lot more to it that we have to rule out, right?
When you're getting to the bottom of the cause of the fire, let's say, do you ask the accused perpetrator, you know, why did you do this? What was the reason behind it?
That can be a question, especially if they're wanting to take responsibility for what they did. Through that questioning process, that could be one of the questions. And we always say you can climb out of a hole, but you can't dig yourself out of one, right? So, and if someone is in that position and we ask them to be truthful with us, a lot of times people just say, well, I was mad at this person or I just didn't want to make the payments on this anymore. So, it's all over the place.
Are you physically arresting and handcuffing this person, taking them to the county jail? What does that look like?
No, sir. That's where we work with MPD for that. Usually they'll take someone into custody, and then we would go to the jail with them to file charges.
When you first got into firefighting in general, is this what you saw yourself doing? I mean, is that something you wanted to do in the future?
No, when I first got into it, I was ready to fight fire. I didn't know much about the fire marshal's office, and I was assigned to an inspecting captain. So we were out doing fire code and occupant safety inspections half of our shift, and that's what introduced me to that and or to this division. And as decades went by, and I got more and more training, I thought, well, hey, this is probably where I need to be.
It seems like that'd be a really interesting aspect.
Yeah,
I mean, just overall, it seems like it would be rewarding in some areas and enjoyable to actually go out and investigate different situations.
Yeah, we enjoy it, and I've got a really good team, and they are always listening, got their ears on, listening for that call to go out and dig into something.
With us today from Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue, from the Fire Marshal's Office, we have Brian Lowe. Stay with us, and again, we will be right back.
In today's changing world, you need a financial planner that you're comfortable with. Rely on the bonds that you've built with trusted friends at Old National Bank on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard here in the borough. And if you just moved here, visit us and enjoy warm, homemade cookies.
Honey, the cookies are ready.
Like Grandma used to make. Old National Bank, we're better together.
2230 Dr. MLK Jr. Boulevard. Old National Bank, member FDIC.
Looking for a lift kit for your truck or Jeep and need the right experts to install it? Look no further than Tire World. In Murfreesboro, Smyrna, and Laverne.
Tire World, we keep your family rolling.
Everything is more expensive these days. If high prices are dragging down your summer plans, would a little extra cash help? If you join Heritage South Community Credit Union and open your first account by June 30th, you could win $1,500 to fuel your summer fun. Plus, we're giving away great prizes every week. Now is the perfect time to learn why we say we help when others won't. Learn more at heritagesouth.org. Limited time offer, restrictions apply. Insured by NCUA.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Again, with us this morning from Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue Department, and again, we're talking about fire-related issues, fire investigations, I mean, just a little bit of everything. We have from the Fire Marshal's Office, Brian Lowe, and again, we've been talking, I guess we covered pretty much everything, but yeah. On top of all that,
yeah.
One of the things we didn't cover were some of the issues with open burning and having a fire permit. And what does all of that look like? Because every once in a while you hear about burn bans and, you know, permits required. Tell us about that.
Really, fires will fall into two categories here, and say recreational or commercial. So recreational, we don't necessarily need you to call and ask permission for that. In the city ordinance, I believe it's spelled out as anything smaller than a 3x3. You know, if you have a fire pit, you're doing s'mores in the backyard, you have an aftermarket, I guess, device like a chimney or these solo stoves. If you're using those in your backyard, there's really no need for you to call and request to use those. We do spell it out how far those need to be from structures, from fences, just a safe distance operate and use. Now, anytime something becomes offensive to your neighbors, we're obligated to come investigate, and we leave that to our company officers, our captains, our fire engine captains. If you're burning anything other than wood in that's putting out a lot of smoke, and that's real pungent and bothering your neighbors, they're probably going to ask you to put it out. And if you don't put it out, they will put it out for you. Now, if you're going to have a fire inside the city of Murfreesboro, we ask that you have a way that's supervised by an adult, and that you have something nearby to be able to put it out, either a bucket of sand or water. Commercial fires, which you see a lot of construction sites around town, they'll have fire pits and fire blowers to keep that fire stoked. That's a way, really, of reducing the amount of traffic that's coming off of that job site. They can burn tons and tons of material on that job site to keep trucks from going down the road. But we do watch that pretty close. And if the wind's above 10 miles an hour, we're not going to allow them burn. If we have storm fronts moving through, anything that's going to either push that fire smoke onto a neighboring or to another neighborhood, or might keep the smoke low, we're not going to allow them to burn that day. But for the most part, for like today, it's a beautiful day, the winds are low, we're going to allow folks to burn.
For that, do these companies that are doing construction, do they have to have a permit themselves in order to burn that debris?
Yes, for that particular job site, we require them to have a permit. Anytime they start another job site, they're going to have to get a permit. And what that does is that creates an event for the fire marshal's office where an inspector can go out and check their fire pit and make sure they're conducting the way we want them to burn.
With the cost of land going up, we're seeing houses and subdivisions being built closer and closer together. Mm-hmm. Is that posing a stronger risk for fires that possibly could spread?
I would say yes. Anytime you have people in a hazard, right, that risk goes up. So that's something that I will assess during pre-construction meetings. If I have a neighborhood that's just out by itself, the potential is that I'm going to allow them to burn. But if I have a neighborhood that's going in between a neighborhood, or if it's near our industrial park, if there's any food processing nearby, any of our retirement communities nearby, where they may be, you know, exposed to some of that smoke, then I'll request that they chip that material and not burn. So, yeah, it's each fire pit, it's a judgment call to where they can burn or not. So
if they're near a food processing type facility, what does that have to do with the fire itself?
Well, there's potential if that smoke gets into that facility. Really, any structure, if I feel that the smoke is going to be a hazard to it, the safety setback is about 150 feet. But if it's within 100 yards of a food processing plant, I will probably just say, hey, chip, just because we got your neighbors over here, they got important work, right? They're trying to feed us, so we don't want them to have to worry about your smoke entering the building.
What about situations where you have condominiums or townhomes? Are those people who own their own townhome, are they allowed to have like a chimenea or some type of fire pit in their backyard, or not their backyard, but on their back porch?
Well, it depends. It depends on how big that back porch is. So chimneas need to be, I think, at least 15 feet from a structure. And that means also from your fence. So if you have a big enough back porch, you probably go out and enjoy that. But I would say most of those zero lot lines have maybe a general use area. And that might be a good, if you want to have a small fire, go out into that general use area and do it there. But
man, as more neighborhoods come up and houses get even closer together, it's going to be hard for people to do that kind of stuff, isn't it?
It is. You are correct. So it's, you know, most of our calls, most of the complaints we get are from people who are burning in those areas where it's really congested.
One of the questions we had texted to us was asking about the different requirements in order to move up within the fire department and become a fire marshal. So what are some of the different, I guess, certificates or things you have to do in order to move that direction within a fire department?
Well, right now we ask that, you know, all of our fire inspectors be certified firefighters. And most of the fire marshal's office, they have worked themselves up through the ranks. So fire inspector, state certified fire inspector. And then once you become a fire inspector, and if fire investigation is something you want to do, you can go challenge that investigation class and get your certificate to do that. But there are time requirements on all that, service requirements for the city of Murfreesboro to be able to enter into the fire marshal's office.
Looking back over your career, how important was it for you to start out actually fighting the fires as opposed to just starting out within admin or within the fire marshal's office?
Well, you know, a lot of fire service is on-the-job training, right? And I didn't realize it at the time, but just, you know, when you're first in the door, a lot of times you're seeing that fire in its building phase and incipient phase is what they call it. And as that fire builds, a lot of times you're seeing where the seed of that firework started. And over the years, as you're fighting fires and you're seeing enough of them, you're gaining experience of one, of finding that origin, where that fire started, that fire behavior, how it acts and how it burns things. And you know, part of investigation is really going from the unburned to the burn. So the area of least damage to the area of the most damage. And that's really how we find the area of origin.
I can imagine. I mean, it just makes sense that you're going to kind of learn that issue of how the fire or where the fire started as you continue to fight the fires.
Yep. Yeah.
And obviously talk to people and find out what happened right before the fire occurred.
Yeah, well, you know, it's very important. First person we interview is that firefighter who went inside first to, you know, what did you see?
I'm sure that story is always a little different depending on where the fire is, if it's a auto fire, a house fire, a business, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It is. Business fires, just, you know, depending on what's in there, it's really the unknown. You know, you'd like to think that nobody would store propane or gas inside their structures, but it happens.
When people have a propane tank and maybe they think it's empty, but they leave it in their garage thinking, well, next time I go out to the store, I'm going to get this refilled. Or maybe it's a full one they put in their garage. How dangerous is that? And how often do you see problems with that?
We don't see a lot of problems with that. They are relatively safe. You know, obviously, if they are exposed to the flames and become part of that fire, they can produce. They'll vent off. They have safety measures built into them. But I can't recall that really causing us any problems. So we have had some house fires where it looked like fire got onto the deck and there was a grill there and it gave a little more fuel to the fire and it grew a little faster than what was expected. But as far as the tank, you know, blevying or blowing up, it's not been a real issue.
And I'm sure the answer is going to be the same as to what this question is. This person was asking about those large propane tanks or natural gas tanks that are directly next to a home that do things, I guess, like power the water heater, as an example, like we did earlier. But those are also fairly safe.
Yeah, they're safe. So, yeah, that's going to be propane tanks. A lot of times we'll see them, I'm not sure, pony tanks or something, but usually about 98 gallons, I think, or less than 100 gallons. But, yeah, in areas where you can't bury a tank or areas where you don't have natural gas, that's another option for folks to either have a hard line to their grill or to their gas logs inside, or we see a lot of on-demand hot water heaters these days that are fueled by them.
If one of those were to be right in the middle of the fire some way, would they just explode, or are there mechanisms in place to make sure that doesn't happen?
They have vent holes, and they're going to relieve themselves before it gets to that point. But I can tell you, if I was assessing that house or walking around looking for the hazards, and I did see that would be on my mind. If there was fire nearby, somebody would be assigned to protect that, to put water on it.
Now, I know a couple of years ago, there was a push for new homes, whenever they're built, to actually install the water lines, the spray lines within the ceiling. Is that something that ever really caught on? Are we seeing more homes built with those sprinkler systems in place?
The residential sprinklers, I think that's personal preference. It's not mandated here. There's a few here in the city of Murfreesboro that have them. I think for new construction, I think it adds about $250 a square foot to that construction, $2.50 per square. And then the retrofit, it goes up a little more. But it's just a return on investment or cost. Just someone has, if you're building a house, you have to make a decision, hey, is this something I want to do? But I always say, really, it's not really preserved unless it's protected.
The kitchen being the number one place for most house fires, maybe, I guess you could have it just installed there.
Yeah, that's a good point. We do have folks, I think some of our apartment complexes will have Ansel systems over their hoods. But unattended cooking, it's probably our number one cause of fire.
Last question, because I know we're about out of time, but this person said they just moved here from the East Coast. Do paramedics have to be firefighters as well when they're hired on? I guess they're asking if firefighters have to be paramedics as well.
I'll answer this from two different directions. So the city of Murfreesboro, we do not have a transport service. Rutherford County provides that service inside the city. Now, we hire firefighters at the city of Murfreesboro. You can be a paramedic, but we can train you to be a firefighter. But we require all firefighters to be advanced EMTs.
Again, Brian Lowe with us this morning from Murfreesboro Fire Rescue Department, specifically from the Fire Marshal's Office within the city. Thank you for joining us. Yeah.
What happens when the thrill of Powerball meets the thrill of NASCAR? You get a chance to win an exciting trip for two to the NASCAR Championship race in Phoenix, Arizona. Plus, the chance to win $1 million in a special drawing. Enter the NASCAR Powerball Playoff Second Chance Drawing at TNVIPRewards.com between May 10th and June 30th for your chance to win. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly. NASCAR is used with express permission. NASCAR LLC is not a sponsor of this promotion.